welcome to the Native Informant Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Sarah.
Thank you for being here. Dana, before we even get started, I want everyone and their mums to know that you are a person that I've known for the last 7,000 million years, which equates to about 15 years.
Love it.
I just really wanted to kind of get into the nitty-gritty of the conversations that I've had this season, partially to do with multicultural identity, sociocultural content, sociopolitical content. And what better way to get started than for you to introduce yourself to the world on this podcast and just let me know, how do you self-identify as a person that comes from a multicultural background?
First of all, little disclaimer, you haven't changed a bit. If anything, this is the calmer version of Sarah.
I know, I've been very tame throughout this podcast, but you know, now I'm going to let my hair down, so to speak.
Okay, well, I love that. I love every version of you, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
So, Dana Al-Hanbali, I'm from Kuwait, but I'm originally half Palestinian, half Lebanese, proudly. And I very recently, about a year and a half ago, moved back to the UAE. I actually went to college here. That's how you and I met. I went to college in Sharjah, and yeah, spent the majority of my career building my company in Kuwait. And as of a year and a half ago, I'm here.
The fact that you said I'm first and foremost from Kuwait, but then I'm also Palestinian and Lebanese, is that the order that you mostly self-identify with, or do you switch it up depending on who you speak to?
It's a really good question. I definitely switch it up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I only give kind of a short answer if I'm not interested in having the longer version of the conversation. Interestingly, I was just in Greece. I was at a conference, and the way I introduced myself was, yeah, I'm Palestinian. And it was interesting because the audience there were purely European. So I don't even know why I did that. I don't even know if it was very conscious. Maybe on some level it was, but yeah, Palestine was on my mind, and I made it a point to say that is where I'm from. So it does change. It does. But I don't think it's always intentional.
When we talk about identity, we always have to kind of preface it by saying, like, who's our target audience? How do we code switch? And you and I have had endless conversations about this, just, you know, from the fact that we both come from very multicultural backgrounds. Do you find it a struggle of sorts to self-identify as Kuwaiti within the context of Kuwait or abroad?
Well, I find it very exhausting, to be honest. I've never said that I'm Kuwaiti. Technically, I don't qualify as a Kuwaiti. My mother's the Kuwaiti, and moms don't pass on their citizenship to their children in Kuwait. So I never call myself Kuwaiti, but I do say I'm from Kuwait because that is the culture that I am closest to. That is the dialect I speak in Arabic. That is what I have seen and lived. That is where I was born. So that's kind of the context of why I would lead with that. But I call it exhausting because I find that anytime I do introduce myself, whatever the order may be, I'm met with some sort of, I don't want to say resistance, but some discomfort. Because there's always someone that's going to challenge why I am whatever the first thing I said was. I've said this before. I've never been Lebanese enough for the Lebanese, Palestinian enough for the Palestinians, Kuwaiti enough for the Kuwaitis. There's always going to be a comment about, yeah, but you don't sound it, or you don't look it, or you, no, really? Are you fully though? Like, how much? I don't know. It's just, it's been an exhausting thing that I've had to come to terms with. I'm more comfortable talking about it now because I'm very comfortable in my answer. I'm very proud of my roots in the fact that Palestine and Lebanon make up the essence of what is me. But my home is Kuwait, and I'm not going to deny that. It became so exhausting to have to keep apologizing for who it is that I was. I got to a point where it started out slow. I still used to kind of cringe a little bit when people would ask, and I would wonder, oh, can I talk about, what do I talk about first, or what do I say? It took a while. It took a couple of years to transition into it. But definitely once I got into my 30s, I became more comfortable. Now I'm very unapologetic about it. In fact, like, I almost dare you to question it. Like, yeah, I am from Kuwait, and I am originally Palestinian and Lebanese. Let's talk about it. Yeah. I'm very happy to. Definitely the most comfortable with it now.
What ends up happening when you have a conversation surrounding identity, you have these kind of gatekeepers that sit there and they want to box you into something for their own comfort level. Honestly, I'm so over it. I've had a similar experience where that has happened, where I was talking about my half Emirati identity and it was offensive to them that whatever I was saying was somehow not fitting within their understanding of their own identity. Yet they failed to understand that identity in and of itself, it's transformational, ever evolving, ever changing. And most importantly, it's incredibly nuanced. Mm. You are talking about something very distinct from your own experience.
I want to touch on what you just said because I find it very interesting. One, I love the fact that ever since I did meet you, you were always someone who never shied away from it. So even if it was something that maybe you were internally struggling with, you were always very proud to talk about both sides of where you come from. And I always found that inspiring. And I found that very brave.
Oh, thanks.
I'm serious.
I appreciate it, Dad. man.
I'm really, really serious because it takes a lot to just stand up and do that. And I know that from my own experience. I find it interesting, these gatekeepers that always took it upon themselves to kind of decide what it was okay for me to say I was or wasn't part of. And what's interesting about it is, in all my years, in all the countries that I've lived in, and maybe you can relate to this too, I've never seen one version of an Emirati, a Kuwaiti, a Lebanese, a Palestinian, whatever it may be. Yet it is these people that for some odd reason have decided that there's only one way to be one of those types of people that are almost, I don't know how to say it, but it comes from a space of insecurity that I never really understood. I never understood what all the fuss was about if there were people that didn't fit the mold in a certain person's eye of where they were coming from.
It's interesting how you mentioned your Kuwaiti dialect. I also have that same thing because I'm like, you know, Bab al-Hara, whenever I speak Arabic, I couldn't speak Emirati to save my life. It just doesn't come out of my mouth. I apologize to all of those who will be morally offended. You know who you are, but so clearly it like really upsets people. When you speak in Kuwaiti, how do people respond?
So when I'm in Kuwait, it's pretty normal because in Kuwait, there are a lot of people that are Kuwaiti but come from different Arab origins. So people that potentially could look a little bit like me that are speaking in the Kuwaiti dialect. So I don't think that it's as out of place in Kuwait. And plus the nature of my work kind of, I don't want to say forced me because it was a choice. I find it easy to do. But because of work, I did it a lot more. What was interesting about it, it's when I would go back home and have to switch because my father speaks in a obviously Palestinian dialect. My mother speaks in more of a Lebanese dialect. When I would go home, they would question me like, okay, like why are you speaking Kuwaiti? When I'm outside of Kuwait and I speak Kuwaiti, I always get questioned like, where are you from? Why are you speaking that? So it's been interesting. I've always shied away from speaking Arabic in general for that specific reason, because I don't know why, but I always found it to be something, the way that I would be questioned about my dialect would evoke a sense of shame in me. And I hate saying that, but it's true. It would make me feel like, ugh, sound like an idiot. I don't sound like I know how to speak Arabic when I do know how to speak Arabic. I can read, I can write, I can speak it fluently, but my dialects are mixed. Mm-hmm. I even have a little bit of Emirati in me now when I speak, which I love, by the way. but my point is, it was something that I would shy away from for that reason, because I want to avoid the judgment. So I would always end up speaking English. But now I own it. Yeah. Now I love it. Now I don't care. Now when I'm around Palestinians and I start talking Kuwaiti and they look at me and they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, what?
Yeah.
Like, what? It's fine. Like, I love it.
The same way that you were expressing like, oh, it was like a bit of an insecurity and stuff like that. And I didn't speak Arabic. Mm. I did not know the difference between a Syrian dialect and a Lebanese dialect where there's a massive difference. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I couldn't tell the difference. And I had to learn really quickly, but it was not meant with acceptance. It was met with a lot of resistance. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of obstacles that I had to move through. And it was a very lonely space. What are the usual kind of, I guess, haters that you address?
It's interesting because I don't think they take on one form, but they come in one mindset. And it is the mindset of they have not made up their mind about who they are and what they represent. And I say that because that is consistently where the conversation ends up going, to this place of them having questions that they're not ready to address about their own identity and almost answering from a place of complacency. For them, it's just, you know, why should we be questioning this? This is who we are. And you're the one who doesn't fit the mold. And the fact that you're questioning it makes you irrelevant to this. Unfortunately, the ones that have had the most, I don't know how to say in English, but التلطيشات, do come from women, which I find disappointing. I don't know why, though. You know, I really don't know why it consistently has come from women. I have an incredible circle of women around me. But when it came to this idea of being confronted about where it is that I say that I'm from, it has consistently been women, interestingly enough.
I mean, I've been trying to figure that out myself. And I think a lot of it has to do with whether it's internalized misogyny, whether it's to do with social conformity or insecurities from their own upbringing. It's like they become either your biggest advocate or your biggest enemy. You become a mirror reflection of what they see as a prime source of their insecurity. Either way, instead of trying to learn from you, they choose to kind of stand against you. Mm-hmm. And it comes once again from this broken record. If you're not with me, then you're against me. And that's something that I'm just so sick. Like, I'm so over this bullshit. Like, I'm done, you know? Has any of these women that have been sort of your biggest competitors, so to speak, come back and apologized or come back and said anything to you?
When I look at my relationships with women that maybe started out judging me a little bit unfairly and then ended up becoming my friends, I feel like that is a testament to how committed I was to not let that reality faze me or bother me. So I'm very proud of that because it did take a lot of effort because it does hurt. It does hurt to feel like, you know, no matter what you do, you're just not going to be accepted for a variety of reasons that are out of your control. I feel like there's something profound about walking in the world with a sense of bravery in staying committed to who you are. And that is something that in a weird way generates a lot of criticism for reasons that are beyond me. But somehow, if you stick to it, it attracts people. Mm-hmm. There's I don't know what it is. It's like a reverence. It's like people, it attracts people. And maybe they start out hating you, but you end up becoming friends. And I found that that's kind of been my experience with that. You know, it's funny, before I came here, especially because it was International Women's Day a few days ago, I saw a lot of videos around, you know, why do we keep perpetuating this idea that women don't support women and whatever. People who like to live in that, you know, delusional world where they don't want to acknowledge what is actually happening in our society, I find are a big part of the problem. I'm not here to perpetuate this narrative further than it already is and exists in our reality, but we can't deny the fact that it is true. And I've seen that in men and in women. But if I'm talking specifically about women, I have found that that is something that comes from a place of how they feel about themselves. It's as simple as that. And where they are in the context of their own lives. Are they women that are in some way silenced from things that they want to express or say or principles that they want to live by? If that is the case, then the first target's going to be people like me. You said something else about it being a very lonely experience. Mm-hmm. That does resonate with me. It is lonely. It's incredibly lonely because especially when you're young, all you want is to belong and be accepted. And I'm not saying those feelings are completely gone. I think a part of me is always going to seek to belong a little bit more to my Arab community. But it's very difficult to do that when for so many reasons that are beyond me, I stand out. I stand out, for lack of a better phrase.
You're a goddamn unicorn.
And I just feel like, I mean, there's also nothing wrong with that. You know, I do have a place in this world and hopefully my contribution will be good.
And you can carve it out. You can carve it out however which way you see fit. Yeah. And going back to what we were saying about Arabic, I'm like, maybe that's one of the reasons why I struggled with having an Emirati accent, because I never felt that I could do it. It just didn't come naturally to me. It didn't roll off the tongue the way that we would like it to. And I think because living abroad for so many years and having my mum as my first data point when speaking Arabic, Syrian was just the natural way of speaking. Mm. And so I find it interesting that for you, in the places that you lived and the places that you kind of grew up, Kuwaiti was the sort of natural way of speaking.
I relate so much to what you're saying about living in different areas. I actually feel the most Arab
when you're abroad.
When I'm abroad.
That's so true. I'm like,
and
I'm so Arabi,
proud. You know? I'm so proud. And no one can judge me for it. And no one's going to know anything. And I can just be who I am. And I feel the most proud of my identity, all three of them. And I talk about all three of them. Yeah. Literally, I was just in Greece. And before that, I was in India. And I was just, people were telling me, my God, you have this energy and your eyes light up. And
you're like, I'm Arab.
I know. Yeah. And I'm so proud. Yeah. I'm so proud.
But it's interesting because most people would think that somebody like you or me are like West in passing. Yeah. And it's like, oh no, my friend.
No, it's the opposite.
Compadre, when I'm in the places of the West, I am like Arabiye, you know?
100%. And it's just, Aslan, you want to hear something interesting? The quote unquote privilege that I find in looking the way that I am and sounding the way that I am and being Arab is when I have to have difficult conversations about being Arab with other communities. Because unfortunately, they're more willing, like I know how to navigate those conversations because of who I am and my background and even the way that I look, honestly. Mm-hmm. Everything that I can say, not everything, but like most of what I can say will get by versus someone who maybe had a little bit more of an accent. So it's kind of been my superpower in that way. but definitely feel the most proud and most Arab when I'm outside the Arab world. I hate the term the Arab world, by the way. I always say it. I shouldn't say it. Outside the Middle East.
You prefer the Middle East to the Arab world?
Yeah, because I feel like the Arab world sends the wrong message of we are one and the same, and we are all, we have a shared language, we have a shared mother tongue, we have a lot of shared cultures and values, but we are all independently different countries, cultures, people, and I think we should honor that.
But don't you think that the Middle East actually refers to the term of it all being one space, when in actual fact it's like you have the Levant and the Khalij? Wouldn't it be like Central West Asian or Central East Asian, if we're talking geographically?
I mean, look, with the way that I see it, Middle East, I like it because it refers to the location, mm-hmm. not because it speaks to what it means to be Arab.
But Middle East to who? The West.
True. Yes, very good point. Mm. Very good point. Mm. Middle East to the West. But my issue with calling it the Arab world is we fall into the trap of everyone thinking, I'm going to use the ugliest example. Now, the way Palestinians are being pushed from Rafah, asking to the neighboring Arab countries, whether it's Egypt or at some point they were asking Jordan to just take them in because you guys have all these other countries, is bullshit. Mm. You know, they can't do that. We are not one in the same. Palestine is its own country. Then we have Jordan, Egypt, and so on and so forth. Each one carries with it its own identity, its own Arab identity. So my concern over using the term the Arab world is it almost makes it seem like we're all one and the same, which I don't think is fair, not because that doesn't make me proud. I'm proud of every single Arab country, and I would be proud to be from any single Arab country. But I don't want to put this kind of veil over us where we just represent this one thing. I think, no, we represent an incredible array of beautiful differences that make us different and bring us together.
I wanted to shift the conversation because I admire your t-shirt that you are wearing so effortlessly, my friend.
I try to be subtle.
I wanted to move on to a subject matter that we are both aware of because it is happening before our very eyes. And of course, you being Palestinian, half Palestinian, the last people that I've interviewed, maybe three or four people, we've had a conversation. And a lot of the times we've said, you know, it can't get worse than this. And it does. And so how are you feeling about the current atrocities that we are witnessing in Palestine? And what has been your position throughout this unfortunate time?
I mean, it's been an incredibly heavy, sad time. I can't deny that. The world as we know it, not that it was doing a good job of living up to my expectations of it before. It's showing how far beyond repair we have become as a society, as humanity, as a collective consciousness, whatever the hell you want to call it. The genocide that is happening is something that has been the source of what I keep calling an awakening on so many levels, an awakening of how much we as a people have been ignoring all of the signs that have led up to this point, how we as a people have been incredibly selfish in our pursuit of whatever it is that we were pursuing in our own lives, greatness, success, whatever you want to call it. It's been incredibly heavy and it's been incredibly eye-opening, and it's taught me more than I expected to learn under such horrible circumstances. I've seen what it means to have faith. I've seen what it means to your point, to have an unwavering, unapologetic sense of identity and commitment to that identity and commitment to that place that I wouldn't have imagined is possible to have. I don't think there are people that exist that are as committed to who they are as the Palestinian people. And it's interesting because even the way that I refer to them, I don't even include myself in that. Very recently, I've had to unlearn a lot of things. I think the biggest term that I've kind of pushed myself to unlearn was this idea of I'm a Palestinian living in diaspora, when really I am a Palestinian living in exile. And I think it's so important to be conscious of the way that I talk about my connection to Palestine, because in meeting a lot of the Palestinians from Palestine during this period, I've seen that I have a lot of work to do when it comes to asserting myself, when it comes to the way that I follow my faith, when it comes to the way that I act with my family, the way that I act with my peers. It's changed me. It's changed me in so many ways.
That's very true. And I think you speak to a larger collective that is also kind of going through a lot of unlearning, whether they're Arabs, Muslims.
As Arabs, it has come from a place or from terms that they have deemed okay to use. So when it comes to our relationship with the West, it is specific to the media culture, the government, and the fact that they have historically just not been able to keep their nose out of everyone else's business all over the world. So a lot of the way that we express ourselves or respond has been from a place of almost defense or being reactive versus being proactive. Mm-hmm. And I feel like going back to what I was saying about Palestine, I feel like the awakening that has happened, and I don't think it all started in October. It definitely, the resurgence of it started with social media, but I think it comes from a place of us kind of owning up to what it is that we stand for and who we are and asserting ourselves.
You know, I agree with you. I don't think that there is a stronger community that is rooted in who they are, that understands thyself and knows thyself to the degree that Palestinians do.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's almost kind of put me in a place where I've had to realize I have so much to learn, because everything that has to do with my Palestinian identity, my history, my ancestry comes from what I've been told. Okay. And while there's nothing wrong with that, I mean, my father was born in Nablus, so there's a lot to tell. It comes from a place of truth, obviously, but there's a lot that I need to be asking more questions. And I think the biggest takeaway from what has been happening in Palestine now is it has put me in a place where I am questioning the role that I have played in where we are today. Mm-hmm. Whether it's with the fact that I haven't educated or invested in educating myself enough about the issue, or contributing. How have I been helping? I've built, you know, two businesses now. What contributions have I made to supporting Palestinians in Palestine and abroad? And I think it's important to kind of hold myself accountable to that. And I guess that's one thing that I am truly grateful for that has come from this incredibly unfortunate experience, which I hope will be ending soon.
Inshallah. And speaking to that experience of accountability, I think it takes a very specific type of personality to be able to put their hands up in the air and say, you know what, hey, I messed up, or I don't know what I'm talking about, or please teach me, help me unlearn. But what I think the West and the West in general needs to realize is that they need to put an extra effort, because the whole time that Arabs have been handholding this type of social discourse, it's been drawing blood out of a stone, like really trying to push it and teeth it out like nobody's business, because like it's like, come listen to what I have to say, let me try and explain this to you, please listen, you know? And now it's kind of like, you know what? I'm putting my hands up in the air. You take that step forward. Mm-hmm. I'm done with having to hold your hand, pat you on the back, give you a gold star whenever you've done something good. And now it's your turn. You decide if you want to have that conversation. Have you faced that with people?
Oh my gosh, so much. You know, especially in October when all of this started, and I'm referring specifically to the genocide, not the occupation and the ethnic cleansing that is going on 76 years old. When all this started, I for some odd reason, I took it upon myself to really want to have these uncomfortable conversations with the others, with the people who couldn't see what was happening for what it is, who couldn't see beyond the lens of their own conditioning. And I made an effort to kind of go out there and speak to these people and try and reason with them. And when I say reason, it's not to convince, but just literally to share facts, to share, according to them, alternative truths, because what they believe is their truth, and I can't deny that. But I was met with such a shocking resistance. I don't even know what to call it, Sarah, because, you know, it's one thing to disagree. It's a whole other thing to choose not to see. It's cruel. Mm-hmm. It's a conscious choice to not want to see or not want to understand what is going on. And I feel like when you see that across the table from you, when you're trying to have a conversation with someone, I find that very difficult to forgive. I find that very difficult to move forward with. So even the way that I act in those situations, I no longer am interested in confronting you. I feel sorry for you, genuinely. I feel incredibly sorry for anyone who chooses to remain in their whatever world that they live in. But obviously, once they do decide to kind of cross over and see beyond their own conditioning, their own brainwashing. I am here. I am here to share. I don't know if handholding is the right term, because I also don't look at myself as the, you know, ambassador to the history of Palestine. There's so much that I still need to learn. But I do think it is a collective effort moving forward. And I think it is something that a lot of us are doing together, whether it's in the conversations that we're having offline or the conversations that we're having on social media. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I am definitely not forgiving to those that have made a choice to stay in whatever world they have chosen to live in when a genocide is going on before our eyes.
Absolutely. And I think what people generally in the West were having a hard time digesting, at least friends that I had, was that they were not getting the same information that I was getting, and that they refused to turn a blind eye to the fact that as Arabs, we already know where this is headed. Mm-hmm. We knew 10 steps ahead of what you're talking about. Really? Mm-hmm. Really? You do not see what is happening before your very eyes? You don't trust your ability to critically think?
But that's what's scary, Sarah, because even if all you are seeing is one side of the narrative, we are at a point in our collective history in the world where even that should be cause for question. Mm-hmm. If we as Muslims and Arabs can very clearly recognize and see extremism, mm-hmm. and see how that extremism is not related to our own religion and our own culture, and even though that extremism is the only definition that has been consistently perpetuated in the Western world about us, something that we have had to consistently defend forever. If we have the ability to do that, and we've had the ability to do that pre-social media, mm-hmm. in today's world, there is absolutely no excuse. Even if all you're seeing is one narrative, that in itself is enough of a reason where you should question, why am I only seeing this narrative? Mm-hmm. There has to be a bigger picture here. All it takes is asking questions.
Absolutely.
And it's a choice to ask those questions. So if they're not doing it, it's conscious. It's not. It's no longer, oh, haram, they don't know, they're not educated. No, I'm sorry, there's no excuse. I'm seeing 16-year-olds on TikTok educating themselves, going and understanding more about the history of Palestine, understanding Arabs and Arab culture, understanding Islam, people converting to Islam, yeah. because all they're doing is picking up a Quran and reading. It's mm-hmm. as simple as that. Mm-hmm. For me, there is no excuse.
We can do a full circle right now to what you were saying in the beginning, which was that a lot of the times, whatever someone is insecure about is a projection of their own insecurities and mm-hmm. their own self-hatred. This is like the West having their own insecurities and self-hatred projected onto the Arabs. It's like, you claim that we are uncivilized or primitive or ill-educated, or we are not open-minded enough, or we don't understand things. It's like, no, you're not open-minded. You are ill-educated. You are the one who is seeing things from a one-track mind. And you have to be accountable for that.
And especially when it comes to, if we want to bring it back to what we were originally talking about, this idea of identity, there's such a danger in perpetuating narratives when it comes to any story. And I feel like what this has shown us, what this genocide has shown us, is that there is less of a need of being attached to a story than there is to being attached to values. Because I feel like it is the values, had we been people that stuck to a collective list of values, we wouldn't be where we are today. Globally, whether it's Palestine or Congo or Sudan, what we are seeing happen is not just coming from a place of a one-sided narrative. It's coming from a dangerous place where we are functioning from a place that isn't rooted in common values as humans. And I think that's the scary part.
It even goes back to what we were saying before, that when we talk about individualism, collectivism, it seems to be a broken record, because we are almost coerced by the West to seek refuge in individualism and operate from a position of individualism, breaking away from family units and breaking away from what it means to be a collective body of people rooted in indigeneity. That is what is weakening our ability to stand together and fight for one another and advocate for each other.
Today, the way that I look at it is that Palestine and the choice that you make on where you stand when it comes to the issue of Palestine has become a barometer.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly.
Absolutely.
A moral barometer. So I feel like there really is no question about it anymore. I'm even done with the whole, whenever you talk about Palestine, especially in the past, you always have to preface it with how this has nothing to do with how I feel against the Jewish community. Of course, it has nothing to do with how I feel against the Jewish community, but that shouldn't have to be how I preface my support for to be against a genocide.
Yeah, or the condemnation. You have to condemn something in order to speak.
Exactly, which I think is so, I mean, again, it plays into that false narrative that, you know, the majority of us are people that you should fear. So yeah, I don't know. To be honest, Sarah, there hasn't been a day that has gone by where I haven't thought about Palestine and what is going on. I'm completely immersed in the news. I post about it. I've been shadow banned. It is the conversation today. But I find it very frustrating when I speak to people that have kind of made up their minds about it, saying that it's already gone too far and we've gotten to a stage where we have to just accept it, accept things as they are. And that is the kind of conversations that I'm no longer willing to have. Not that I ever wanted to have them, but I just feel like it was more okay to accept the status quo before than it is now. I no longer shy away from this idea that because of how vile and horrible things have gotten with this genocide, that we need to accept what feels like this finite solution. And I'm no longer interested in having conversations with people that want to kind of stop the conversation there. I do believe that a free Palestine is something that I will see in my lifetime. The way that I talk about it in a way where, I'm going back. Mm-hmm. I am going back. I will go back. That is the only narrative that I am that I'm sticking to.
And that should be something that everyone should model the belief system against. But honestly, Dana, you are a trooper in so many ways. You have always, always carried yourself with a level of respect and grace and dignity and honor. And it is honestly such a privilege to have you on the podcast. And I know that usually this type of spiel comes at the end of the podcast, but I feel like you have to give credit where credit is due, and you've remained consistent. You've remained as you are. And I feel us having this conversation right now is kind of like if we were in the studio back in the days in Sharjah, where we would have conversations, not of the similar vein, but definitely with that same level of excitement and conviction. And I think that that's something that we should all aspire to be. We should always speak to from a position where we are so comfortable and convinced in our positioning that it doesn't matter which way the conversation goes. Like, I am who I am. I understand this. I understand that my people, I understand the larger collective, and you're not going to sit there and sway me or keep me off balance. And I hope that you're willing to listen to what I have to say if you choose to listen to it.
You know, I just had a flashback of you while you were talking. You know, Sarah, you always represented someone that was didn't subscribe to a specific way of thinking. And you were always very, very open and willing to share it with whoever you are around. You're the type of person that would walk into a room and you possess a specific type of energy that I don't know what the right word is, but your energy radiates in a way that is going to make a lot of insecure people uncomfortable. And what's interesting about you is that I don't think that has fazed you, but I think the way that you've evolved as a woman is that you've been more conscious about how you articulate what it is that you want to say. And the reason I say this is because I think you and I, there's a lot that we share in terms of the way that we walk this life. But I also think that there's a lot that we may not always agree on. I think what I appreciate about my relationship with you is the fact that you haven't let the reality of the way the world works impose how you're going to live in it. And I think that's important to acknowledge.
Oh, thanks, Dana. I really appreciate that.
It takes a bravery to do that. It takes a specific type of bravery to do that. I really want you to know that. And I want you to know that's what I think of you.
Well, thank you. Well, likewise. It's like the lack of support, women supporting women. Here we are. I'm like, I love you. I just love you so much.
And it's so easy to do, right?
It is.
And it doesn't change anything about me. And I'm able to recognize that in you.
Yeah.
But it's just, aside from it just being women, I just wish that the entire world functioned that way.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't take anything away from me to say that I am from a specific place, even though if I don't look the same as you, if I don't talk the perfect Arabic the same way you do, if I don't possess the same passport that you do, whatever my background is, you know, me asserting how I feel, what I think, how I express myself in this world shouldn't take away from you at all. Mm. And I feel like if everyone functioned from that space, maybe we'd live in a less scary, vile world. I've become quite religious after this whole experience. And I'm a big believer that life doesn't end here.
Yeah.
This is just this, you know, transition in time that we have to get through. And I'm a big believer that we have to be conscious of the role that we play in this world and how we contribute for good, ideally. So I'm not giving up. Mm. I may be incredibly sad, but I'm not giving up. I hope no one gives up. I hope no one gives up and accepts whatever narrative or reality that anyone in this world wants to impose on us. And I hope that in our fight of not giving up, in our fight towards a free and liberated Palestine, in our fight towards a free and liberated world, we keep in mind that it is being grounded in shared values. That's what's going to get us there. Not anything else, not how we identify, not any of the arbitrary stuff we somehow keep finding ourselves arguing about. It's in those values. So question those values. Question if they are aligned to who you are, how you want to live your life. And that's a start.
Dana, it has been such a pleasure having you on this podcast. I'm just glad that we had the chance to talk on so many different topics. Who better to have the 10th episode than with you? And everything that you said was really beautiful. And I'm sure that it's going to resonate with a lot of people. And I really hope that you enjoyed your time at this podcast.
Thank you, Sarah. It was an absolute pleasure to be here. I always enjoy my conversations with you. And I always enjoy that I don't know where they're going to go.
Yeah.
I like it. I love that about you. And keep doing what you're doing. It's a brilliant platform. You've never shied away from having difficult conversations. And I hope that you will keep challenging the status quo and pushing us all to have more of these conversations. Thank you.
Right back at you. And for those of you who are listening, please like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and we will see you next time.
Inshallah.
Inshallah. Bye.
Bye. Free Palestine.
Free Palestine.